Hey y'all, this is Cold Cases, Cults, Murders, Oh My, and I'm your host, Pamela, with my dog, Sam, and let me give you a little update on Lindsay. So her daughter has had the baby, and now Lindsay is a grandmother, and, well, I know that y'all don't really know her personally, but I do, so I know she's over the moon right now, playing with that baby. And, yeah, that's really all I have as far as news for the week. So, also, you might hear me trying to clear my throat. I really apologize, but my voice is being weird today. Now, on to the case. We're going to look at the death of Morris Davis Jr. on April 5th, 1985 in Great Falls, Montana. So, I'm not always so lucky to find documentation about the victim. Normally we have very little, but in this case I got lucky because his family had actually taken part in an interview where they sort of talked about David, like who he was, what he liked to do, that kind of stuff. So I'm gonna get a chance to share that information with y'all. So here we go. Let's get to know Morris Davis Jr. His nickname was Bear. Morris was an avid sportsman. He loved fishing and hunting. One of his family members said that Morris always got a deer with one shot on the first day. So I'm not a hunter, so I'm not really sure, but I'm guessing this means like on the first day of deer season, he would go out there and it would only take him one shot to take down the deer. I'm assuming that Montana has like deer season, like we have deer season, but I'm not really sure. Anyways, he also loved race cars and he was even part of a pit crew at a racetrack. So I would have said local racetrack, but the article didn't actually specify if it was local or not. I'm just assuming that it was local. So Morris, he dreamed that one day he would own his own race car and he would get to race at Indianapolis someday. Sadly, he would never get to live out that dream. However, it was well known that Morris was a great mechanic and he could fix almost any car. But don't you worry, he also did other things besides hunting and fishing and working on cars. He had recently learned how to snow ski. He already knew how to ice skate and he loved playing hockey. Morris also had two dogs. One he named Missouri River Sunshine. She was a golden lab, and it's said that she was his true love at the time. In the same article that I read about Missouri River Sunshine, I also read that his other dog was named Shiner, and that she was always by Morris's side. And she even enjoyed rides in the back of his big red truck. Morris had had Shiner since she was a pup, and she was 4 years old when he was murdered. That's just some of the things I could find out about Morris. He seemed like he was a wonderful human being, and for someone to just so carelessly come and take his life, well, that makes me very angry. But let's get into the case now that we know who Morris is, or at least, you know, what he likes to do. Now, Morris was 23 years old at the time his life was taken. At the time of the crime, he was working part-time for Howard's Pizza. This was a local pizza place in town, and he had been working there for 4 months. So, you know, he was probably like, race car parts aren't free, so I'm going to take a second job so I can get to my goal faster. So there was an order placed on April 5th, 1983. This day just happened to be Good Friday that year. The order came in at 8:34 p.m. that night for pizza to be delivered to 1015 6th Avenue Northwest, Great Falls, Montana. What none of them knew at the time was that this was an address to a vacant home. So 15 minutes later, Morris began getting ready to deliver the pizza because, well, he was up next. And Morris pulled out of Howard's Pizza at 9:15 p.m. This was going to be his last delivery before he was off for the night. Witnesses saw Morris on the front porch of the house at 9:20 p.m. This is about the time that Morris would knock on the door and enter the home, where he was shot once. He turned and started running away, but was shot again before he could even make it off the porch. Then he was dragged back into the house, where he was shot 6 more times. When his body was found, they counted 9 gunshot wounds to his body. So here's my question. So witnesses saw him at the door. So I'm assuming, and I could be wrong about this, but I would say they were probably like neighbors. Or at the very least, if you're out walking, I feel like it doesn't take very long for someone to knock on the door to open, and bam, you hear a gunshot, right? But yeah, apparently nobody saw anything or heard anything, which just seems weird to me. I'm just saying. So anyways, back at the pizza shop, they started wondering what was taking Morris so long. So this was around 10:30 or at least a little before 11. They sent out another pizza delivery guy to see what was taking him so long. Now, I know it's back in 1985, and it was harder, you know, to get a hold of somebody. Like, you couldn't just pick up your cell phone and call them because, well, they didn't have cell phones back then. But, I mean, the guy's been missing for like an hour and a half. I don't know. Should you really be sending out just another delivery person? I feel like, you know, that could possibly end badly. And I mean, I think that honestly what was going on was that they thought that, you know, Morris had delivered the pizza and then he just didn't return back. Like, he just went off because, you know, it was his time to be off work. But yet they still were like, okay, well, we're going to send you to the last place that he was supposed to be. And I mean, at least maybe the manager could have gone to find out for himself. I'm just thinking, you know, this delivery guy, he could not be much older than Morris and maybe even younger. Or they could have like called the number that the pizza was called in on, and then they would have found out that, hey, something really fishy's going on here. And then they could have called the police and the police could have went out there. But, you know, that's not really what they did. And you may be wondering why I say that's not what they did. Well, because the police would later say that they believe the killer called the pizza place from a payphone nearby because the house didn't have a working phone in it. So, I mean, if they called the number, then they would see that, hey, it goes to a payphone. But maybe not. I don't know. I've never called a payphone. So if you've called a payphone and you know if you get a message or it just keeps ringing forever, let me know. So obviously when the pizza guy arrived at the house, he sees Morris's car is still there. He goes up to the house to try and figure out what's going on and what's taking him so long. Once on the porch, he makes a horrible discovery because he sees a body lying just inside the sliding glass door. Now, I'm assuming that he didn't know that it was Morris. Probably more likely he just went into shock and he just ran to find help. And so the police and paramedics arrived on the scene. Morris was quickly identified when paramedics Ed Day and Cliff Davis arrived at the scene around 11 p.m. This is because Cliff Davis is Morris's younger brother. I read in one article where Cliff said that when he saw the cowboy boots, he knew that it was his brother. Cliff also stated that he didn't know why anyone would want to kill his brother. Morris was well liked and so full of life. So he composes himself after finding his brother dead on this floor of this vacant home, and he helps put him on the gurney, and like Morris's arm keeps falling off is what this article was saying, and like he would put it back on. And then on the way to the hospital, he was driving, so he would look in the back and see the other paramedics trying to do CPR on him. I mean, I can't imagine how hard that must have been for him. But once they arrived at the hospital with Morris, he was pronounced dead at the hospital. So the police believed that the suspect had taken down the for sale sign that had been up earlier that day. Then he went around the back of the house and forced his way inside. Then he went and made the phone call to Howard's Pizza from a payphone down the road, and then came back and lay in wait for the whoever delivered the pizza. So, like, he didn't care who it was. He was going to shoot them anyways. So it wasn't like Morris was being targeted. After he shot Morris 9 times, he stole his delivery wallet, but he did not touch anything that was a personal belonging to Morris. So, like, he left his wallet and anything else that Morris may have had on him. The murderer took Morris's life for less than $300. And I say it that way because I think that it's horrific that, well, I think it's horrific that anyone can murder somebody, but then, like, you murdered this poor young man who's only 23 years old. He had his whole life in front of him. And for what? To get like less than $300. At any point, it would have been pathetic, but that even makes it more pathetic. Yeah. But that's just my personal opinion. So 3 years later, the police believed that they had found the gun that shot Morris at a local pawn shop. They ran a ballistics test, and it came back as a match to the gun. They would find out that the guy that had sold the gun to the pawn shop had been arrested because he was driving a stolen car that he had stolen from Oregon. Also, he was located, I believe it's 180 miles from the actual crime scene. So, you know, like, he doesn't exactly live in the neighborhood. But that doesn't really matter, I think. Like, look at Israel Keyes. He didn't live in the neighborhood either. But the guy had also stole the gun from a friend. The man said that it was just a coincidence that he had chosen to sell the gun to the local pawn shop in Great Falls, Montana, 3 years after the murder. So the police, they dug into his alibi and everything and checked it out. And, well, they found out that, you know, he wasn't actually in River Falls at the time of Morris's murder. So they turned their attention to the owner of the gun. I will not be mentioning his name because the name in the articles that were given was just a name they made up because the guy asked that his name not be put in papers. So I personally am not going to name the alias or anything else. I'm just going to call him the guy or the gun owner. So they moved on, obviously, to the owner of the gun. And He said he most definitely did not kill anybody. He just threw that out there at the very beginning. I mean, that's what I would have started with, too. However, he said that, you know, on the night in question, he was at home watching his infant son. Now, if I may interject here, how do you remember, sir, that you were home chilling with your baby 3 years later? I mean, sometimes I don't even remember why I go in the kitchen, let alone what I was doing on a certain day 3 years ago. Like, did you just know you were going to need an alibi for that night? So you had it ready? How exactly did you remember? That's all I'm saying. So after tons of investigation hours and polygraph tests, they also let him go because, well, apparently his alibi checked out. Or he just wasn't here. But Cliff, who's Morris's brother, was convinced for the longest time that the owner of the gun was the one who killed his brother. But that would all change in 1995. They ran the gun back through ballistics. Like, I'm not really sure why they did it, but it's a good thing they did because, well, they found out they made a mistake. And yeah, that was not the gun used to kill Morris. Can you imagine that? Like, these police just like, well, I mean, that one guy, he was already in trouble for like stealing cars and guns and all that jazz. But the other guy, the poor gun owner, like, he was like minding his own business. And then one day the police show up at his house claiming he murdered somebody. And it's like, I think 11 years later, it's like, oops, my bad. That wasn't your gun. But unfortunately for the police, this did put them back, you know, at square one. Like, they had no suspects. They had no gun. That is until the arrest of a man that was convicted for another murder. So he was convicted in 1999 for a murder that took place in 1986. His name was Dubray. And yes, I'm only using his last name. You want to know his full name? Well, it's in some of the articles that I'll list in the show notes. But I mean, he's a murderer, so that like lowers my respect level, maybe. I don't know. But also, I just probably forgot to write his first name. But anyways, he was convicted for the murder of Suzette Pritchard. So the reason that the police believe that he was the killer of Morris as well is because the FBI gave a profile that said they believed that whoever killed Suzette was also the same person who killed Morrison. And so Suzette was, I don't remember how many times she was stabbed, but she was stabbed at a convenience store that she worked at the time. And like I said earlier, 1986. Well, Dubray didn't do himself any favors. When the police received a recording from one of the prison phone calls he made where Dubray called another man trying to set up an alibi for the murder. Even without the phone call, the police had a pretty good guess that it could have been Dubray because he received a traffic ticket placing him, well, he received two traffic tickets actually, placing him in Great Falls before and after the murder. I mean, the man has a heavy foot. What can we say? But it's also jackpot for the police because, I mean, that puts you there. But not only that, they had evidence that shortly before Morris's murder, Dubray had committed a robbery in a nearby town where he shot a guy with a 22 caliber pistol, which just so happened to be the same kind of gun used in Morris's murder. However, they never actually tested the bullets, so to see like if they were fired from that same gun. So I find that a little strange. Like, it would be a easy way to be like, here's the evidence that he did it, but yet you don't run them. I guess my question is why? And I mean, I don't expect to have an answer. And unfortunately, I don't have an answer for y'all. But, you know, if I ever happen to come across the answer, I will definitely let you know. So, Cliff, Morris's brother, contacted Dubray many times about the murder. Allegedly, Cliff said that Dubray had specific knowledge of the house where the body was found and other information about the crime. Dubray also supposedly told him that he was at the house the night the murder took place, but he was not the shooter. I mean, come on, man. If you really said that, everybody knows. Before Dubray died in prison, one of the detectives tried to get Dubray to admit to killing Morris, but he would not. So that means the case remains open and unsolved to this day. But, you know, that's pretty much the end of the case. But, like, what do you guys think? You know, was it the guy at the pawn shop with the gun and or the gun owner? Which, I mean, hello, later they were proven not, or the gun was later proven not to be part of the crime at all. So obviously, probably those guys are out of there. Or was it Dupree who took the life of Morris Davis Jr.? Tell me what you think. Or if you think, oh no, it wasn't Dupree. Because that would be interesting to think, because the police have quite a lot of evidence saying that it was him. But with Dupree being dead now, they are obviously never going to find out. Although, if Dubray told the brother that he was there, I mean, he did tell him he wasn't the shooter, but I mean, really? If you're there, there's no evidence of more than one person. Kind of looks like maybe you were the murderer, but if he was willing to say that to the brother, then why wasn't he willing to tell that to the police? Like, I didn't do it, but I was there. And I say this because, like, the guy was already serving life in prison for murdering Suzette. So it's not like anything else was going to happen. I mean, yeah, if they add another life sentence, you're already serving a life sentence. So you might as well have done the right thing and helped the family out by telling them the truth. That's all I think about that. But, you know, I could be thinking wrong. So that will do it for this week's case. So like us and give us a 5-star review on whatever platform you listen to us on. I mean, if you liked the podcast. If not, well, be nice. And if you just really loved the podcast, tell a friend. We always like to make new friends. So thanks for listening, and I hope you have a great week. And go be kind to everyone you meet, because you never know what battle they're fighting. And that's all I have for you this week. Bye.